So yeah, I was thinking about what I was gonna say when I come up here, and I guess I'll start off. My sobriety day is November 13th of 2021. My home group is here, Tampa IPG. I have a sponsor, and I sponsor other guys. And yeah, so I was thinking when I was in treatment in Arizona, I picked up this sponsor, and he made me like dive into service. He was like, I met him and asked him to be my sponsor, and then like I showed up to the meeting the next week, and he was like, hey, you should be a part of the home group and like get a position and stuff. So I was like, that was kind of like my first introduction to doing service, I guess, like this time going around. And yeah, I was like the security person, because like we were in this church, and they didn't want people wandering around, so like my job was to make sure people don't wander around the church. But yeah, and yeah, and then he had me, we went to meetings together a bunch. He had me, whenever we got to this one meeting, it was like a Saturday men's meeting, he would be like, we'd walk in there and he'd be like, yeah, go greet outside. I was like, okay. And yeah, so that was cool. And like now, like kind of when I moved back here to Tampa, I kind of just like started doing service stuff, like just picking up commitments, doing like coffee. I was doing coffee for here for a while, doing like setting up, breaking down. And I mean, it's cool for me. Like when I just like, it's kind of, I don't know how to explain it. Like just my mind's kind of like clear when I'm doing it. And I'm just like, I'm doing this, setting up these chairs, making the coffee, whatever, whatever. And yeah, and it's really cool. I think if you're new, you should try to get into some service, do that. Yeah, I saw one guy tonight, he was asking me, he was like, hey, can I come greet with you guys? And I was like, yeah, yeah. And he had a really good time. He looked like he was having a really good time. So, I mean, yeah. If, yeah, so I would recommend doing that. And, yeah, I feel like I'm kind of just rambling at this point, so thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Dom. And our group has asked Jess H. to be our main speaker tonight.
Rowdy drunks, I tell you what, but thank you for the warm welcome. And thank you, Kim, for asking me to speak. And good job, Dom, on service. I, too, had my first sponsor, like, get me a home group, get me a service commitment, but it wasn't patrolling security, which sounds really cool, by the way. It was, like, literally doing the bathrooms after every Friday meeting, so not so glamorous. But it humbled me enough to, like, and I was so awkward, you know, first getting sober. Having that service commitment, it could have been anything. I mean, picking up the cigarette butts, I was just happy to be a part of and really not have to, like, overly socialize, because that was really hard for me at the time. So, anyway, sorry about that. My name is Jessica. I am an alcoholic, 150%. My sobriety date is July 29th of 2016. I have a home group. It's the 11:30 women's meeting at Yana. And I have a sponsor, and I'm sponsoring others. So, anyway, I'm kind of nervous. Call out, shocker. There's a lot of people in this room right now. But, you know, I feel like we're all family in this dysfunctional way I didn't know I wanted. But it's true. So what it was like for me, well, I was a surprise pregnancy. My mom did not know she wanted a baby girl. So she was a single mom in the middle of going to nursing school in Canada. I'm from Ontario, Canada. And thank goodness my grandparents were there to help support her. But it wasn't just my grandparents. I changed, you know, I had different caregivers throughout my early years. It was a babysitter, a family friend, a daycare, fill in the blank, you know. My mom did the best she could, but like I just remember early on, wondering why was I so confused? Like, why was I getting dropped off at strange places for multiple days at a time? Like, and where's my mom? And I miss my mom, and when she's coming back. So, like, I think that was my very first resentment, to be honest with you. And I didn't understand, right? And nobody, an adult doesn't really consider, like, okay, I'm going to talk to this little kid, like, look, I need to take you here because I'm going grocery shopping, and I can't, and this is where you're going to go, and this is when I'm coming back. Like, you know, adults don't think to talk to children that way. I wish she would have. It would have helped. But I learned at an early age that if I threw the most colossal fit tantrum, I could get my way. Like, the adult would talk to me. The adult would ask me what's wrong, which, let me tell you what's wrong, okay? and then, like, also, like, if I was in a situation I didn't want to be in, I learned that me throwing this tantrum would get me to go home. They would take me home because I was being unruly and loud and obnoxious. So I mentioned this because this is kind of like one of my first coping mechanisms. Like, this is how I emotionally coped with things I just didn't have a care for. So anyway, to this day, if you ask anybody that used to watch me when I was a little kid, they'll tell you I was a really problematic, difficult child. So yeah, cute. But so my mom, she became an RN, and she started working in Sioux, Michigan, on the border of where we were in Canada. She met my stepfather. She dated and married him, like, God, and then moved us to Michigan. And then halfway through his career, he decided he wanted to go to the academy and be a state trooper. How is this applied to me? Well, he was brand new out of the academy, and he was super trooper. He he took it a little far. And I was the only child in the home at the time, and I was definitely the test subject. So that was hard. That was hard. Again, I wasn't being talked to like another little human being. I was talked to as a child, a minor. You show respect or there's consequences. You follow the rules, you don't talk back or there's consequences. And yeah, that wasn't really fun for me. So he gets transferred to where he was going to be a cop. And this is in a small town called Gladstone, Michigan. It's a friggin' real small town with small town problems and drama. And my first drink was way overdue, in my opinion. Like, I could have probably started drinking at 5, but I didn't. The first time I took a drink was, I was 15, and it was actually with my mom. My mom was mad at my stepdad, you know, she was going through her own stuff, and I was acting a fool like I usually do, and I was home, and she wanted a drink, so she's like, hey, you want, I think it was like vodka and orange juice or something. I'm like, yeah, yeah. It's not every day an adult treats you, the child, like another adult and their friends. So that was pretty appealing to me. The taste of the alcohol was terrible. Didn't get drunk. I just got heartburn. And but the coolest part about it was because, like, for that night, my mom got a little buzzed, and that was the first time, like, her and I talked, like, people. Like, it wasn't the mother-daughter dynamic. It was, like, person to person. And I think that was the day that I started craving that validation, that respect, and I was willing to go to any lengths to get it. So that kind of perpetuated my drinking career. Immediate consequences. Before the age of 21, I had 2 minor possessions of alcohol. I had a zero tolerance, which is like an MIP, but driving a vehicle. I sat in jail for domestic issues, fighting. I started blacking out and getting belligerent almost every single time I consumed alcohol. Yeah, so that right out the gate, like, right out the gate, there was no, like, fun time, so to speak. But I was drinking, I was self-medicating, right? Like, before, so I'm the only alcoholic that I know of in my family. There's 2 other potentials, but I'm definitely the only one that says I'm an alcoholic and works a program. So I had no prior knowledge of what I was doing or why I was acting the way I was. I just know that I couldn't stop acting the way I was and that I was self-medicating. Like, that's how I deal with any feeling. It was no longer acceptable to throw that temper tantrum, right? It was no longer acceptable to be belligerent and hostile, to get my way. That's how you go to jail. Fun fact. So I just learned to numb it out. Like, just give me the next distraction. So that's how I self-medicated. So I'm like 19. I'm in my first year of community college for liberal arts because I had no clue, right? I just knew I got this Pell Grant and I was going to use it, and I did horrible. It was at this point I got kicked out of my parents' house. Like, it was a no-contact order because there was a domestic. I hurt my mom. I pushed her. She called the police on me, and I sat in jail. And then I was basically homeless, couch surfing. And, you know, like, I basically burned every bridge in that shitty small town. Like, I did get run out of Michigan. And I didn't really need much of an excuse. I was so desperate, I just picked up, and in 2007, moved to Tampa by myself, basically. I thank God that it worked out, because, like, hindsight's 2020. I just don't know how I survived, because I had never been on my own before. I had zero lifelines here. Like, anyway, it was sheer determination and survival instincts, I think, at that point. So from 2007, 19 years old, to, when did I move back? 2010, I continued to drink and use other drugs to prevent me from blacking out and being so belligerent. It kind of leveled me out. And no consequences, no accountability, nobody to try to stay face in front of, and I regressed. I absolutely regressed. There was no character development. It was regression to being feral. but you couldn't have, like, if you would have asked me, though, I don't know if I would have had common sense to tell you what I was doing, what I was trying to do, or any kind of motive. I just was on this, like, runaway train, and the only thing that got me to pause for a second was... my mom was dying of cancer. She had been fighting it 7 years. And in 2010, I got a call from my Aunt Mary, who I hadn't talked to in a couple years. And she was like, Jess, come home. Your mom doesn't have much time. And I was grateful for that call, because honestly, like, that pause, like, I was so desperate to just rest, you know? Like, I was going for my mom, and I knew that was going to be real shitty and real hard. But... I just needed a break. Like, I had no direction. I had no connections, really, no relationships that were based on anything of value, and I was ready. So I packed up two little suitcases. That was everything I owned at the time, and I made it happen. In, like, 2-3 weeks, I was living back home in my childhood home, and I think it was, like, a month and a half, and then she passed. And I'd like to tell you that I was... you know, the daughter that showed up for the family and could take it with grace and be there for her, you know, but I wasn't, you know. I drank, like, almost every night that I was there, and there was times I just would stay out all night, not come home for a couple days, and my stepdad wasn't having that shit. Like, he's like, not in my house, you know, even at, I'm in my 20s at this point, and just no respect, right? Again, I couldn't cope. I was self-medicating, and yeah, I couldn't stop. Every time I left the house, like, 9 times out of 10, I would get drunk, and I had no plan on doing it, and it just would happen every time. So when she passed away, it was surreal. Like, she'd fought cancer for a number of years, and I mean, she was like a superhero, in my opinion, because, like, every time, like, she was backed into a corner, she would come out of it. And she would bounce back, and we would have a few years of remission or some good times. So when it finally, she did pass away, it was really hard. I was probably in denial. When I wasn't in denial, I was drunk. So I don't think I really accepted her death for a couple years after she died. So my drinking, I think I stuck around after she passed. This was 2010. It was sometime in 2011, so maybe a year. And then finally, in that year in Michigan, I got an OWI. It's a big girl DUI. It was a percentage of alcohol in my system. And then, so I sat in jail for that. I went back to jail and had to serve some time in the hometown where my stepdad's a state trooper, by the way. Yeah. Frickin' A. I'm on probation. Part of my probation is I'm not to consume any alcohol. And that was the first time ever in a very long time that I had this rule that I cannot be using alcohol. And if I use alcohol and get caught using alcohol, I'm going to go back to jail. And that's around the time I knew I had a problem. Like, I know it sounds insane, like everything I told you up until this point, but this is when I started to get an inkling that I was out of control. Because I kept getting caught by the PO and my stepdad for going to the bars. Like, it's a small town. They see you in the bars. They know who you are. So we, at the very end, before I moved back to Tampa, I got ran out of my town again, by the way. Spoiler alert. I went to this concert in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, because I thought that was going to be a great idea. It was a techno rave type situation. And I probably stayed up for two days straight, just on a liquid diet, like drinking the entire time. And the poor people I was with, man, because I was definitely the instigator, like total peer pressure. I was a bully. And this guy was drinking, like hammered, right, and driving. He gets pulled over. He's getting arrested for DUI. And then they take me to the hospital because I had no other way to get back to Michigan. And just chatting it up with the officer, chatting it up with the nurses. They had no idea I was so hammered. Like, I had been up for as long as I had and drank as much as I did. It wasn't until I passed out, I guess, mid-conversation that they realized that I could be intoxicated. They they did, like, the blood test or something, and I forget what it was. My probation officer was very, like, appalled, though. I don't know what my percentage of alcohol was in my system, but this is the first time somebody called me an alcoholic to my face. She said, her name was Cammie. She's like, Jessica, you had this much alcohol in your system that a grown man would be, like, put on their pockets, like, two times over. There's no freaking way that you should have been having conversations dead face with these people. You are an alcoholic. I'm like, I'm offended. I was more concerned, though, about going to jail. So, I don't know. She was so upset. Like, this is a probation officer who was very upset with me. Like, she cared. She's like, you are a freaking alcoholic. I don't know if anybody's ever told you that, but you are an alcoholic. And that was that. That's all I remember anyway. I was offended. I don't remember if I, like, continued drinking, but it was, like, a short period of time went by, maybe a week. And my stepdad and my sisters and then this lady that was friends of our families whose son went to treatment and got sober. She was there. I'm like, Lori? What? Everybody was, you know, intervention style. I'm like, oh, shit. And I had an ultimatum. John's like, okay, you have to get out of this house or you're going to go to treatment and get help. Like, those are your two options. And at this point, like, looking my stepdad in the eye, he's in tears, like, pretty emotional again, and you would think I wanted to do the right thing. I didn't. I had no desire to be pressured into any of those options. So I said goodbye. It took me 3 days to manipulate and make the arrangements to get back to Tampa. You know, I was a master manipulator at this point, like, survival, whatever. And honestly, like, I had been running the way I had for so long. And I already had it in my mind I was bad, right? Like, the guilt and shame came in the quiet times when I, you know, the hangover the next day when I was just raw, and that would all come flooding in, and so I couldn't have that, so I blotted out again or distract myself in some kind of way. But anyway, sorry, where was I going with that? Bad. So yeah, I was an asshole. I said, screw you, to my little sisters and my stepfather who just lost our mom, his wife. And I picked up and I came back to Tampa in 2011 to start over again. And Didn't really have anything. I had no plan, again. Had a little bit of money from, like, something my great-grandmother left me. I got my hands on it, so it kind of, like, supported me for a little while. But, I mean, I was sleeping in an office-sized room on a mattress on the floor, and just no food, like, maybe ate once every couple days, like, just, you know, just partying, mooching, playing the game, manipulating, you know? I got tired. I got pretty tired. My body started shutting down on me. My alcoholism, the alcohol started turning against me. The hangovers started lasting longer and longer and longer. And on this particular day, sometime in October of 2011, I caught a glimpse of myself in the mirror. And I don't know if it was the hangover or just what I saw. Like, I had that pause, that quiet moment, and I call it my moment of clarity from God, because I started, like, panicking in real time, that thinking that I was going to die, like, tomorrow, if I drink again. Like, unless, you know, I get help tomorrow or today, I'm literally going to die. Like, that was the real feeling I had in my gut, which would never have come from me on any other day other than that moment of clarity. And I realized that rehab was expensive, and I didn't have insurance, so that was not an option for me. And thank God for AA meetings, because you don't got to pay anything. And they happen all the time in Tampa in different locations. And I didn't know anything about AA. This is my first go at getting sober, period. And I ended up finding a meeting that same day. It was at Art Club, and that was my introduction to this program. Got the sponsor, worked the steps, managed to stay sober for 3-4 years, which is an awkward time in sobriety, by the way. it was my first introduction. I did the best of my ability with the awareness that I had at the time. But the thing about going through the 12 steps is great. The thing is, you have to continue to work those steps, right? Like, otherwise, it was really for nothing for me, because it was just, you know, a couple years of being clean after a lifetime of being drunk. Like, I wasn't going to get it all at once. And I went out. I forget even what it was about. I had a case of the fuckets, and I think the boy that I was with at the time made me mad. And so I went out drinking for a year, and I'm really lucky I didn't freaking die. I thought it would be good to become, like, a drunk driver, because that was, you know, I'm like, oh, I've never tried this. So I, like, backed it into the bar I was at that night. I ended up passing out face down in my neighbor's house and got marksman acted. I didn't know that was a thing either. I got really bad really fast. Like, there was no, like, revving up to it. It was pretty bad. And by the grace of God, I was able to find my way back into the rooms. And this was July 29th of 2016, my current sobriety date. And again, it was a moment of clarity from God, because it was a year of basically drinking to die. Like, I, fearless, not in a good place, right? But the day that I decided to call my first sponsor and my old roommate that was also in the program, I had this inkling again, like the first time, that I needed to get help today or I was going to die, like, just plain and simple. And then I also made the decision for myself. Like, I wasn't coerced or there's no frothy appeal. Like, I chose for me that I wanted to live more than I wanted to die. And it humbled me enough, and I was desperate and broken enough to call Marilyn, was her name, and Alexa. And they didn't answer at first, but I took it a step further. I was really desperate. I left the voicemail. Oh, my God. And sure as shit, they both called me back. And they made a plan. Marilyn was going to drive me to this meeting, and then Alexa was going to meet me at the meeting to support me. And these women on each one of my sides were sitting next to me as I was, like, still half drunk and shaking and just not in a good way, but they were there with me. They were like my pillars holding me up that night. And the first week back was humbling. You know, my ego is like, oh my God, everybody remembers me, that I had time, and now I have to come back, and it's Saturday Night Fever, and I gotta pick up the white chick. But I did it anyway. You know, it's ridiculous to say it out loud, but that's the shit you think of, right? Like, you're about to die, and you're worried about what people think of me. Because I had a really great image to begin with. So yeah, just real talk. The 2 years after getting back into the program after my relapse freaking sucked. Like, I don't know how I survived it. It was not nearly like it was the first time. I don't know what it was, but maybe God, my higher power, wanted to, like, okay, let me just beat this home for you. Because I had to fight for a good 2 years straight for my sobriety. And I'm talking brain fog. So, like, my nerves were so shot, like, I would drive around with no music on. Like, just not okay, but just taking it one day at a time and getting into the steps right away. So, you know, I met my husband in this program. We decided to leave our home in Tampa and pick up and move to Miami on an adventure for work. That was great. That was my first time moving in sobriety. I had heard people talk about that, like, you have to have a plan. What's your game plan? How are you going to get plugged in? You should probably not, like, wait on it. And I've heard this in meetings, and then, you know, I actually did it, and I didn't do any of those things. Like, it didn't even occur to me to do these things until it's like, oh, shit, I haven't been to a meeting in, like, 3 months. I giggle about it, but it's really not good because, you know, first it's a couple months here and there. You're going to a meeting maybe once a month. Not sponsored, and it bothers you that you're not being sponsored. You know you should probably get a sponsor until the day that you just stop being bothered by it and not thinking that I should get a sponsor. I was dry drunk, like, by the grace of God again. I didn't pick up, but I was no way, shape, or form sober for a number of years, and that's not fun. That's like my childhood before I discovered drugs and alcohol. As an alcoholic, not using alcohol or anything to self-medicate. And that was a weird, interesting place to be. And I created this, like, self-imposed prison, sober. And the last year plus, thank you, it's been my time to shine. So this program's amazing. You really don't have to do it perfectly. And I can attest to that, like, definitely not doing it in all the right ways, but it's here when you're ready to pick up the tools again. We had the opportunity to move back from Miami to Tampa, my old stomping ground where I first got sober, so that was good. It took a while for me to dip my toe back into AA. Going that long without meeting sponsorships or doing really anything in this program to say that you're a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, I would go to meetings and sit in my chair and feel like a freaking fraud, like straight up feeling like a fraud. And that's a strange place to be, being, like, so miserable and desperate, just wanting to talk and ask for help, but then being too ashamed of yourself to actually asking somebody for help and telling somebody, like, the truth of where exactly you are. But the pain got great enough. Pain is a great motivator, and so is jail. Jail's a really good motivator. And, you know, being dry... you know, I resorted to some of my friggin' feral ways, man, and it's not an excuse, but I was just so friggin' miserable, and I had no coping skills all over again for any big feelings. You know, our home life was pretty shitty. Like, it was shitty. And finally, like, I say finally, like, it was almost like a relief when this happened. It all went down. It's embarrassing as shit, but I got arrested sober, a domestic charge, and, it was awesome, though, because, like, it was a bottom for me in sobriety. Like, I sat my ass in jail with, like, God, it was a lot of women in there that beat their man that night. It was crazy. There was, like, six of us. It must have been, like, a freaking full moon. So, like, it was all of the emotions, right, the grief stages. And I was just mortified at first, the ego, and then all I kept repeating the Lord's Prayer and the Serenity Prayer in my brain over and over again to prevent me from crying, because I didn't want to cry in front of these women, because I had this idea that they were all going to, like, gain up and beat me. Silly. But it forced me to pray, so there's that. And I finally got, like, a calm of accepting where I was, like really accepting and breaking through the bullshit and delusion of where exactly I was. And I accepted it, and my knee-jerk reaction on any other situation would be to try to like manipulate and connive my way out of this problem, right? It's all his fault, or here's my side, or let me call him boo-hooing to make it all go away. I sat in it, and I didn't call anybody, and I just showed up in front of the judge the next morning, completely ready, no matter what was going to happen, if I was going to be homeless that next day or whatever, I was good with it. Like, it'll be okay. And I was really okay, and I was ready to take the consequences, and that's a cool place to be, by the way, when you're just, like, calm and ready and accepting. It's pretty powerful, and I contribute that to God as well. But that doesn't come from me, especially dry drunk me. But yeah, it all worked out, and it was a bottom, and I got to the meeting as soon as the day I was released, and 33. And yeah, it sucked, but I was scared shitless of what had happened and the person I spun out to be, like out of a blink of an eye, right? I mean, it was all building up, but like to see that part of me again, that I can, I'm just as capable of being that person, you know, 7 years down the road or not, like it doesn't matter if you're not sober. Like I am that person. I am that bad Jessica that I used to tell myself I was all the time. So yeah, I was beaten into a state of submission and I was happy for it. And that was about a year plus ago. And I got myself a sponsor, a home group. My sponsor is great. Like she low-key scares me a little bit, but it's good for me because I also know that she loves me. Like, legit, it's not lip service. Like, she really cares about me. So when she, like, gets a little stern and scary, it's a good thing because it makes me, like, actually take her suggestions instead of, like, oh, it's okay, I'll do it later. And then just, like, you know, it's a pushover. Like, I listen to her, and it's a good match, and I'm very thankful to have her in my life. And it's good to have friends in fellowship because that I was really shortchanging myself for many years with that. I thought, you know, oh, I'm awkward and it's too uncomfortable to, like, meet people and follow up on relationships. So I'm better off alone. I'm happier alone. Oh, no. I can attest that it's not better off. Like, this thing is not supposed to be done alone. And when it gets really real, like, I don't think it's actually humanly possible to do it on your own. So I'm very grateful for my friends, and I'm grateful to have hit another embarrassing bottom in sobriety, but I think it saved my life. Like, I feel like I'm in a really good place right now. 10 minutes? Jesus. I've been super sober for a hot minute. Okay. So, I see Jessie right here. So, something that stuck with me when she shared in a meeting, I swear she was looking in my soul, but probably not. But it was along the lines of, if you haven't taken another woman through the 12 steps, you're really missing out. And that occurred to me that night, that I hadn't taken anybody through the steps. Not one time. And I felt ashamed. And I felt ashamed and I felt selfish. And it was powerful because I realized I was taking from the program. I was taking from meetings when I wasn't sharing. I was, you know, I'm not giving it back. And it was an aha moment to me. Like, damn, I really need to just put down the ego, put down the selfishness, and just do it. You know, and it's awkward because I'm an awkward person, but I have 3 women in my life that I'm currently sponsoring. And in this pool, it's like they're very patient with me, and I told them, it's like a two-way street here. This is your sobriety, your program. You know, like, it's not like I'm not demanding anything. Like, let's be, you know, fluent with this. But it's beautiful. I'm learning that it's not just a catch slogan about if you want to get out of, like, your own shit, right, your own prison of shit up here, you do service. And the more inconvenienced you are, the more you can be assured that that's God's will. I used to roll my eyes so hard when people said that. I'm like, yeah, that's no. But now that I'm doing service, I'm using that tool quite regularly in my day-to-day. Because my mind's still crazy. I feel like the more good I try to do in my life, the more the enemy keeps challenging me. it's kind of weird and it's a little intolerable sometimes, but the tools of helping others and then having these women in my life have been clutch. Like, for the times I can't get my own sponsor on the phone or my network, like, there's many different things in this program I can do. I'm on the Tippy Paw bed. And the fun fact, that's how I met my husband. In 2017, 2018, he was a treasurer. I was the co-treasurer. And it was love. And we got married. And now it's this year. It's not the same dynamic. He is the hotel chair, and I'm the bid book chair. And I know I sound like a massive nerd, but this is where I'm at in my sobriety. I'm really in the middle of the boat here, and it's great, actually. There's a close-knit group, and we haven't had to have a bid audit because our behavior was so bad this year, so I feel like we're kind of falling short in that area with the belligerence, but, you know, we have a couple weeks still. Life is good, and... you know, I got sober relatively young in my 20s, and I'm like, this sucks. This is my God gift to party is like right now. What do you mean? What do you mean? This is going to kill me. And, you know, now I'm in my late 30s, and I feel like I have an inkling that my life is taking off again. And that's pretty freaking cool. Like, and I owe it all to God, the program, and that gift of desperation. So with that, I'm going to close.